Boker Tov world, today's daf in Mesechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim HaKodesh, is daf Yutes. And the last thing that we learned was the sugya of Yibum by the Kohen Gadol, and the difference between what appeared to be a difference between a Betula and a Be'ula. In the case where the Yavama was an Arus or the Yavama was an Asua, and we learned at the end that the Rabbanan actually answered either case because of Exera Biashnia Atu Biarishana. So we got up to, therefore, mate lo mate. So the next thing that we had learned is that in the event that a Kohen Gadol has someone that died in the family, there was a Machlokas in the Mishnah, according to Rabbi Meir, the Kohen Gadol sort of makes his way each time the funeral procession turns around the corner. He comes into the street where they were before. And this continues on all the way until they are actually on the edge of the city. And at that point, he has nowhere to hide. And we don't want him to be directly open to the possibility of being metame himself. And at that point, he stops. Rabbi Yehuda said, what he said, at least in the language, was that a Kohen is usur to even leave the Beis HaMikdash. After all, Tana Rabbana. It says in the Torah, Umin HaMikdash lo yetzei. So, obviously, Rabbi Meir has to understand that differently, because he says, yes, he could certainly go out from the Beis HaMikdash. Does Rabbi Yehuda actually mean that the Kohen is not allowed to leave the Beis HaMikdash? Says Rabbi Meir, you know what that means? It means lo yetzei imahem. He can't walk out together with the funeral procession adjacent to it because basically he may actually end up being metame himself, but certainly he's yotzei acharehem. He's able to participate and he can follow the procession as the Mishnah described it on Libet Rabbi Meir. He just keeps moving along and stays out of the way every time that they move around the corner. Hey nichnasim, how is that? Kate said, hey nichnasim, v'hu nidva, hey niglin, v'hu nichse. So this is basically how Rabbi Meir explained his shita in the Mishnah. Then we said that yotzei ad ha-petach. Now the question is, if Rabbi Yehuda has an actual pasuk, what right does Rabbi Meir have to say to redefine the pasuk of min ha-mikdash lo yetzei? It seems to be telling us that you're not allowed to leave the Beis HaMikdash at all. Shapiko, I'm a Rabbi Yehuda. Amalecha, Rabbi Meir, I mean, come on. What do you mean, min ha-mikdash lo yetzei? You're telling me that a Kohen Gadol is not allowed to go home? Like, he can't walk out of the Beis HaMikdash. Obviously, it doesn't mean that. Alahachiko, Amar. There's certainly never any kind of isser of the Kohen going home. So when it says lo yetzei, it can't mean don't walk out of the Beis HaMikdash. What it's saying is, min ha-migdash lo yetzei means mikedushato lo yetzei, that wherever the Kohen Gadol is, that is his migdash. In other words, that is his environment of kedusha in what it means to be a Kohen Gadol. And that's what it's talking about. So that means that the Torah is essentially saying, be very careful that there shouldn't be any tuma on a Kohen Gadol. So that means that he has to make some kind of heker, so that he's not going to come to accidentally or momentarily be overwhelmed and go and get close to the actual mitas hametz. So given the ipehekera, so over here, he knows that he can't be even on the same street in which he's together with the funeral procession. So of course, lo ati laminga, and that's all that the Torah is demanding from him. Kishu menachem. Okay, so this was the machlokas. Now we get on to how we actually treat the Kohen Gadol and to be mechabed, maintain his kavod even while he's being menachem avelim. And that is when he goes to the shura, where the avelim are passing, they're standing still, and he passes in front of them, is what the Mishnah says. Now, that's not so pashut because there are other minhagim in which the avelim are the ones that move around and not the people that are menachim. So we're going to be medayik from this mission about that in a moment. So it says over here, the kishu menachim, when the Kohen Gadol is the one who's doing the nichum avelim, he's comforting the other people who are mourning. He goes in front of them, so he passes by them, and he has the Sigan on his right, and he's passing by with the people on the left. So Tana Rabbana, Kishuhu Over Beshura, Lenachemet Achirim, Sigan Umashuach She'avar B'Yemino. Now this Brisa adds something that wasn't in the Mishnah. The Mishnah doesn't talk about the Mashuach She'avar, but there is a concept of a Mashuach She'avar. And that what happens is, in the event that the Sigan, who is there in order to take the place of the Kohen Gadol, in the event that he becomes Tamei on Yom Kippurim, so if that actually happened, and this Sigan took his place, the din is that when the Kohen Gadol becomes Tahor again, the Sigan is displaced, the Kohen Gadol takes his place back, but the din is that the Sigan is not turned at that point into a Kohen Hedjat. Once you're Ma'ala B'Kedusha, it can't be Morit B'Kedusha. We can't have two practicing Kohanim Gedolim. That would be a disaster. So therefore, what we say is, this Sigan becomes a Kohen Gadol She'avar. So he was an ex-Kohen Gadol. And he's, in the event that this Kohen Gadol dies or is somehow rendered apostle, then he becomes the Kohen Gadol. See, he's called the Mashuach She'avar. He was the Kohen that had the Mishicha B'Shem HaMishcha, and he now is, so to speak, in waiting. The Kohen Gadol emeritus, in a way. Now, that also means that the Kohen Gadol is going to be rather sensitive to his presence, as we'll see. So here we're introducing in the Braita that together with the Sigan, the Mashuach She'avar is also on the right side of the Kohen Gadol, and it adds as well, not only is the entire funeral of people that had just come back from the funeral, the Avelim and everyone that's there, who are coming to be Menachem, they are all on his left. So he is between the two. And what about when he is the one who is the other? U'cheshehu omed b'shurel b'tachimi achirim, when other people are being Menachemim, then the Sigan miyamino, V'rosh Beit Avichol Ha'am Yismolo, there's a slight difference. It doesn't mention the Mashuach She'avar. It only mentions the Sigan and the same Rosh Beit Av and so on. Everything else seems to be the same. So that's strange. Why is that? Mashuach She'avar lo atikabe. Apparently, the Mashuach She'avar does not appear when the Kohen Gadol is the Avel and people are being Menachem him. Why would that be? My time up. Ah, well, that is actually part of the psychology of the relationship of the Kohen Gadol and the Mashuach She'avar, because Chol Shadayte, it actually makes him feel very much ill at ease, because Sovar Kochodibe, he thinks deep in his heart that, you know, this guy is actually happy that I am an Avel, you know, because if anything happens to me, he's very happy, really. I mean, yes, he'll come to the funeral and all, but basically he goes into the Beis HaMikdash, you know, and he now becomes the Kohen Gadol. So anything that goes wrong with me, it doesn't exactly make him feel very bad. And because of that, he is always on edge. If there's a situation where he was in a position of some type of calamity, he doesn't want that guy there. Omer of Papa. But one thing that we do see from this braita, we see three interesting things. First of all, we see very clearly that the word hamemuneh and sigan, it means the same thing. Because in the braita, we call him the sigan, and in the Mishnah, we call him the memuneh, the one who is appointed to take the place of the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur if something happens to it. So it's pretty clear that the sigan and the memuneh one and the same person. I mean, it can't be referring, after all, to the Mashuach She'avar as the Mumuneh, because, I mean, he's not just the Mumuneh. He actually has the din of a Kohen Gadol, except he doesn't do the actual Aveda, because that would cause kina between them. But in terms of Halacha, he really has all of the din. So we wouldn't have called him the Mumuneh. So that means that it's basically a synonym for this is God. So that's number one. Furthermore, says Rav Papa, we see from here, Shmamina, that the way that the Shura is done is that the Avelim Omdim V'chol Ha'am Ovrim, because it talks about as he's over, he's walking in front of them when they're on their left. So on his left. So that means that it's the people who are doing the Nechama, the comforters, they are the one that are moving, and the Avelim are the ones who are standing. Now, we know that not all places have that minhag, but here it seems pretty clear from the Mishnah that that's the way it's supposed to be. Ushma mina Avelim lismol amenachamim neimomdim. Furthermore, we say that the ones who are mematzeh, the ones who put the Kohen Gadol in the middle, so the mourners, it says, are on his left, and they are on the right. So that means that the mourners are on the left of the people who are doing the nichum. So let's talk about some of that, because Tana Rabbanan, there's a braita that says that actually historically there were changes in the situation of a relationship between the Am and the people who are coming to the Shura to be Menachem. So Tana Rabbanan, it actually used to be true that Berishana, Hayu Avelim Umdim, V'chol Am Ovrim. So what it shows in the Mishnah and the Braita, that was the situation that indeed used to be the norm. But the problem was that there were two families in Yerushalayim, Mitgarot Zo Bezo, and they always were having this feud about who is more important. So Zot Omeret Ani Overet Techila, V'zot Omeret Ani Overet Techila, sort of the same situation you have today with, you know, the Haredim that are the super Haredim and the Haredim that are just the regular Haredim. And now the question is, who goes first? And it was just this horrible machlokas at an actual Levaya. It's interesting that the sugya comes up. It was all over the newspapers, people fighting at a Levaya, whether such a person should be buried. It's unbelievable. So things haven't changed much. So when there was this machloket at the time of the Mishnah, so they made a takana. And after the original situation that we were just medayik, that the Menachemim, they're the ones who walk. So actually, they changed it. Itkinu shiva am omdin, the Avelim Ovrim, and they made it that the people who are giving the Nechama, they should stand in place so that there couldn't be any machlokas, and then the Avelim should walk in front of them. Omar Rami Barava, Hirzir Reb Yossi et HaDavar LeYoshlo B'Tzipori, So from the time of Reb Yossi and Tzipori, he reinstituted the minhag as it was originally. The mourners stand, and the menachemim go in front of them. Furthermore, said Rami Bar Abba, another takana, that once I'm telling you the takana of Reb Yossi and Tzipori, he was mitaken, that a woman should never walk in the street with her children behind her. Because of a terrible situation once happened, somebody kidnapped a child from behind a woman and ran away with the child. The mother turns around, expecting to see the child behind her. There's no child. She goes crazy. She starts screaming, "Where's my child? Where's my child? Police." Anyway, the guy that had kidnapped the child said, "Oh, I saw a child wandering into a house. Maybe it's your child." So he walks with her into the house, and he rapes her in that house. So because of that, Rami Bar Abba says that Reb Yossi was mitaken, that they should never walk in a way that the child would be able to be grabbed from behind without their knowing it. And another thing that Rami Bar Abba was mitaken, that Reb Yossi was mitaken, says Rami Bar Abba, "Shinashim esaprot bepetakise mishum yichud." So in those days when you often had a outdoors, meaning out of the city area, in the Sada, where people would use that area to relieve themselves. There was really no way to know whether somebody was there or not. So he made a takana that if women are utilizing an outhouse in a Sada, this is not referred to in the city itself, but in a Sada, people have to know that they're there. The way that they should know that they're there is that they should speak loudly in the outhouse with each other. This is the basis of the minhag in England, where women have to go to the bathroom together. It was all based on the original takana of Reb Yossi B'Tzipori, obviously. Omer of Menarshia Barut, she ilet et Reb Yossi Rabba bebeis almin de Hutzal. So I was once in the Hutzal cemetery, and I actually asked him, halacha, even though you're not supposed to really be speaking about Divrei Torah because it's a Geter of Loig L'Rash, that the Mesim say, oh, you're these live people, take their life for granted, the bastards, and they're sitting around speaking Divrei Torah, and they don't even realize the privilege that they have to be speaking Divrei Torah, and there they do it in front of us as if we're not even there. So that's normally considered to be Loig L'Rash, but where it was Negea, an actual halacha, you're allowed to. So I asked Rabbi Yoshia, Rabbi Yoshia Rabba means the Tana, Ve'amarli ein shura pechuta mi'asra b'nei adam. The din of a shura is where you have to have at least 10 people, not including the avelim. Ve'ein avelim min haminyan. And he also explained to me, it doesn't matter actually which of these minhagim you are using, whether the avelim are standing in place for chol ha'am ovrim, or whether the avelim are the ones who are ovrim for chol ha'am omdim. So either minhag still is defined the same way in terms of the concept of the shura. And of course, there are many dinim about the shura. We had the dinim of the shura, like at the kriyashma in brachas, where we're talking about being able to get somebody's in the shura, whether they're supposed to say kriyashma or daven and so on. This is what defines the shura. The next thing that we said in the Mishnah is that when the Kohen Gadol is the Avel, so then the Am says to him, Onu kaparata, we should be a kapara for you. The question is that it doesn't bother to tell us in the Mishnah, what does the Kohen Gadol say when he is the one who is being Menachem? So, ki Menachem hu achrini hechi amalu, but what does the Kohen Gadol say to people when he's being Menachem then? Tashma, the Braita says that the Kohen Gadol says, Titnachamu. Now, it says that as the continuation of Anu Kaparatcha. So what does it mean when it says, does that mean, is that a response? That the Kohen Gadol responds to the people who tell him, Anu Kaparatcha, and he says to them, Titnachamu. I mean, Hilema, do you think that that's what it means? That ki menachem achrina ledide. When other people were menachem him, so he responds to them, Amala iyu titnachamu. I mean, that's ridiculous. Because then he seems to be implying that chas v'sholem, bad things should happen to them and they should require a nechama. I mean, even if you want to say it in the nicest way that you're being menachemi, may you be mitnachem, it's not a very good thing to say in a situation where someone had died in the family. So isn't that a naksha karamilo? What is he's actually giving them an ayin hara that something bad should happen to them? That can't be. So therefore it must be, and he says to them, meaning that when he is giving the chama to others, that whereas when he is the one who's receiving the nechama, so then they say to him, Anu kaparatchem. But he doesn't say that. What he says to others is, Titnachamu. Shma mina. Indeed, that is the way that Kohen Gadol is menachem. Now let's move on to the next piece of the Mishnah. The next piece of the Mishnah speaks about the dinim of a melech. Up until now, we've been talking about the dinim of the Kohen Gadol. So it says over there that a melech is lo dan, velo danimoto, omer of Yosef. Now, this doesn't mean that all melachim are like this. This is only referring to melachim who are not malchei beis David. So lo shonu ala malchei Yisrael. This is nogea other melachim. Avo malchei beis David, dan vedanimoto, adarabba. They are very much involved in din, and they are also in a matzav, in which there is no problem in donning them, because they are mekabel v'din shamayim, like we see in Yirmiyahu, Beit David ko amar Hashem dinu laboker mishpat. So adarabba, this is one of the great elements that is characteristic of Beis David, is to be don. And if it says that they are meant to be don, then obviously it means that we are don them, because ilo daininan le, inu hechi dainai. As we saw yesterday, if they cannot be nidon, how can they don others? Ve'aktiv hitkoshushu v'koshu. Remember those beautiful words of Tzvania, fix up yourself and then fix up other people. And therefore, if you're not able to face din, how could you be engaged in being don acherim? V'omer Resh Lakish, what this means is kshot atzpecha ve'acharkach kashet acherim. First take care of yourself and then worry about making other people good. So this means clearly that they both are done, as it says Beferish in Yirmiyahu, and clearly they're nidan, as we see obviously from Tzfanya. So then why? I don't understand. I thought that what the problem over here was is that a king's covet doesn't allow him to be done. Obviously, that's not the case. So, okay, so what is the problem? Why can we not be done, Malchei Yisrael? If it's not a pagam, I mean, obviously, we're more marked, but even on the covet of a melech from Beis David, right? So, Ela Malchei Yisrael, my time, hello. So why do we not done then? That's Bishul Maiseh Shehaya. There was a terrible story in which once an Eved of Yanai Malka, Katla Nafsha. Okay, I mean, he's got thousands of avodim, you know. By the way, Yanai Malka was not really a Malchei Yisrael in the sense of being a member of the kingdom of Yisrael. Malchei, he was not from Beis David because he was with the Chashmonai. Also, it's not clear to say the word he was, because we seem to refer to Yanai Malka. Many of the people that were serving as Melech and the Malach of the Chashmonaim at that time, and it could be a reference to two or three different people. But in any event, the Maisa was that he had an Eved, one of hundreds probably.
I'm confused. What do we refer to Malka Yisrael then?
Malka Yisrael.
Classic example.
As I said when I explained it, and you keep your eyes on the road, you idiot. Stop looking down at the phone. And as I said initially, that the idea of Malchei Yisrael over here means non-Malchei Beis David is what we're actually talking about. You can send my regards.
The Rebbe has to give him a bracha now. Rebbe was chashin, he didn't want driving.
You're right. I didn't even notice. That's what he was showing me. You're right. You should be gebenched and be zeicha to have the safest drives at all times, especially if you've got a Tanya driving for you.
Oh, no.
All right. Anyway, so
you're on the wrong side of the road.
That I noticed. That I did notice. All right. So anyway, the mice was that this was, you know, okay, it's something that to Yanai Amelichus, it's whatever, it's worth 10 cents, you know, he's got an Eved, and he murdered, and therefore they were going to actually call him in for a murder case. So, Amelushim and Ashetach lechachamim, that we need to actually, Tnuei Nechembo v'nidinenu, we're going to have to judge this guy and see whether he was a chayev or not. And in no way should you give him any additional considerations just because he happens to belong to the king. So Shochule, so they sent the message to Yanai HaMelech, Avdechokot Ol Nafsha, and, you know, we're unfortunately going to have to drag your Eved in to court. Shadrele, so Yanai said, you know, Yanai actually sent him without any problem and had him brought to the court. But then he didn't get the real message. So that sent another message. You're going to have to come. To Adnamilach, you have to come here because it says Beferish in the Pasuk, Vuhu Ad Bebaalav. So when a shor is Mamis, says Vuhu Ad Bebaalav. So Amratur Yovo Bala Shor, Viyamod Al Shoro. So in the same way that your Momon Amazik, it would be your shor comes to court, you have to come to court. That's the din. And this Evet is your Momon Amazik. You have to come to court to be there, because we can't don the person who killed when he is essentially someone else's Eved. Okay, so he comes to court. Atav Yativ sits down in the courtroom. So Shimon ben Shetach says to him, Yanai HaMelech, Amod al raglecha v'yayidu b'cha. Stand up, and here we're going to have the witnesses testify. So, being as he's the one that is suffering a monetary loss, so it turns out that he is the nidon. And therefore he has to stand. As it says beferish, va'amdu shnei ha'anashim ha'shalem ha'rif, and we're not asking you, lo lefaneinu ata omed, we're not asking you to stand in front of us, but we're asking you to stand in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ela lifnei mi shamar v'haya olam ata omed, shnei amar v'amdu shnei ha'anashim, Asher Lahim Hariv, they're the ones who have to stand up. So, Yanai says to Shimon ben Shetach, Well, I think that we should get the opinion of the court on this matter. I mean, it's not just for you to say. I don't think we should handle this the way you're looking at it. Let's see what most of the other Dayanim believe about this. So, Shimon ben Shetach turns to the Shoftim, the Dayanim on his right, and they'll start looking down. He turns to the left. Everybody's looking down for some reason. Oh, says he, Amarlam Shimon ben Shetach, I see. You are actually deep thinkers. Why don't you put your little hands under your chins, you know, and sit there and have somebody chisel out a statue of you, you know? Balei machshavot atem. How about if the Baal HaMachshavos in the Shemayim comes and pays you back for your lack of courage to stand up for the Dinei HaTorah? Miyad bo Gavriel v'chofton bekarka v'meso. And so Gavriel throws him out to the ground and the entire Sanhedrin is killed. Bota sha'amru melech lo dan v'lo danimoto, lo me'id v'lo me'idimoto. We cannot trust these people, and we cannot bring them into din, and because of that, if they're not from Beis David, where the whole idea of Beis David is that they are dafka, that Navi is miyachid them as din al abok and mishpat, then like this, we would have said that the Chachamim, once they make a takona, so it's lo plug. But since the Navi is miyachid, as we brought the pasuk before, that the essence of Malchus Beis David is danu al abok and mishpat, because of that, they did not make it a low plug, and was bedavka melech lo dan v'lo danimoto in terms of the Malchus that was not Malchus Beis David. Now, as far as the Eidos is concerned, even though we include it over here as if it's part of the Takona, it's not really true, because we actually do not expect a melech because of the pigam in the covet of the malchus, like we saw before, to be able to testify for someone. So the only reason that we bring it over here is because of the question of whether we will take in the bezim will take in a melech to testify in elements of afrushim yisura, where it's necessary in order to be koveya an isur. Normally, we would have said that even to melech has to do that, because after all, there's ein chachma v'ein tfunah in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we don't give the kovet to the melech. But because of this, we made a takana that even for such inyonim, we would not demand a testimony from a king. The next thing that we learned is that lo choleit v'lo choltzimet ishto, we do not do chalitza for his wife. He does not do chalitza. Obviously, where he's going to be spit at, that is not covered for the melech. And the Yehuda said, actually, he is allowed to do either yibum or chalitza. And the question is, how is that possible? Any the Omer Elashi afilu mandi Omer nasi shemachal al kvodo kvodo machul melech shemachal al kvodo in kvodo machul. How could Rabbi Yehuda taina that a king is allowed to do chalitza and to do yibum, to make himself basically a stud for someone else? Isn't that a pagam in his kavod? And it says that a melech cannot be meichel on his kavod. So why does Rabbi Yehuda say, well, if he wants to, so adarabah, he's a tzaddik and he should be zocher l'tov. Shenemar, why can he not be meichel? Because it's not up to him. Som tasim alecha melech. The double lashon means you have to make sure that emato has to be alecha. So he has to be an object of awe to you. So if he undermines that, then he would be actually going against the chiyuv of what a melech is supposed to be for the yam. So how could he do that? After all, it would be a pagam in the chashivas of the melech. So we understand chalitza for sure. Chalitza is that he spit at. I mean, how can you spit at a king? What exactly is the problem of yibum? So on one level, Pashtus is, the way Rashi brings it, is that it's like he's becoming a tuffel to his brother, and we're using him to get his brother's wife pregnant. And the whole thing is like very low class for a melech. But that's not the way the Rambam brings it. The Rambam brings that the issue is very simple. Since he's not allowed to do chalitza, so he's by definition not allowed to do yibum, because the Torah puts together the two chiyuvim. So kol she'eno b'yibum is not going to be eno b'chalitza, is eno b'yibum. Anyway, so what's Rabbi Yehuda's explanation? Rabbi Yehuda's explanation is that when it comes to a mitzvah, that is different. That, by definition, is not considered to be a pagam in the same tasim alech hamelech, because dafka what he's doing is that he's showing the chashivas of the melech in terms of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's covered is what's most important to him. So he should be zocher l'tov. The truth is that the chachomim also say this in normal cases of mitzvah, but over here, it seems to be different. Some of the Rishonim say because this is like really an extreme kind of pagam. To be spit at is like the ultimate, in a sense, of a pagam. So it could be that the Rambam's explanation is necessary because of the Gemara elsewhere. The Gemara Saita talks about the fact that the Chachamim are made that for a mitzvah, the melech is able to be mekayim the mitzvah. So I'm like, okay, I understand. It's not like the greatest thing to do yibum, but why is it so terrible? So eino chinami. In order to make this a real distinction between this group of mitzvahs and all the other mitzvahs with the chachamim related to Rabbi Yehuda, it needs to be that it's a true begam in his covet. Spitting, being spit at, is the classic example of zilzal. Okay, continues the Mishnah. Ve'ein dosim. This is the last piece we have to understand in our Mishnah. You cannot marry a almana of a melech, and according to Rabbi Yehuda, a melech is allowed to marry the almana of a melech, and he brings a raya, because Dovid HaMelech is told that I am giving you Nishei Adonecha. So Nishei Adonecha seems to mean the wives of Shaul, so meaning if you want to take the wives of Shaul, you would be allowed to. Tanya, Omrula the Rabbi Yehuda Chachomi said to Rabbi Yehuda, you don't understand the pasuk. That is not what the pasuk means at all. It means you can take the women that your Adon, meaning Shaul, prevented you from having. That's what it's talking about. The Nashima Ru'uyot lo mi Beit HaMelech, Umay Ninu, Meirav, Umichal. Oh, so here we get into the issue. Remember that Shaul had promised before the Maisa of when David actually was Zeicha to kill Goliath, he had promised that whoever goes up there and gets rid of this giant, the king is going to give him tons of money, and he's going to give him his daughter to be his wife. Then comes along David. David does this, and Shaul, remember, gets nervous about David. He seems to be a little bit too melech-like for him. And so what happened was that Shaul managed to figure out excuses, as we're going to see, for why the women that he promised to David were not really married to David, and all types of strange things that he tries to do to get David knocked off so that he won't have to worry about him as a competition for the Malchus, because remember, things were not going to be good for Shaul because he hadn't waited as he was supposed to, and he knew somebody's coming along. Okay, so he had two daughters, Meirav and Michal. You'll notice the connection of those names to Yaakov and Esav, right? Yeshli Rav and Yeshli Kol. So one of them is called Meirav, and one of them is called Meikol. So Shalom told me David Rabbi Yosef. How does this make sense? I mean, Meirav and Michal were actually sisters. And it says over here that these are the women that are going to be roi for David. How could David marry two sisters? Eich masa David, shtei achayot b'chayehem. Omar lehem, he didn't. David married Michal achar mitat Meirav. So he only married Michal after Meirav had already died. That was Rabbi Yossi's approach. Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha said, actually, The whole marriage to me, Rav, wasn't really a kosher marriage. It was Kiddushei Ta'ut. And because of that, he was never considered to really be married to Merav. And the raya is that David HaMelech says, Tzna et ishti et michal, asher erasti li b'neyah orlot plishti. So here we find that David HaMelech insists that he has one real wife. Now, this was after Shaul dies, and he sends a message to Ishbosheth. And he says, this Ishbosheth was Shaul's son, and he says, send me my wife, Michal. Okay, now how did he get his wife? He got his wife because Shaul, in an attempt to get David into real trouble with the Plishtim, insisted that he brings him for the erusin of his daughter. He has to bring him 100 orlot of Plishtim. Now, remember, we've spoken about how, I don't think it really means orlot. I think it means the whole organism. But basically, this was certainly not inclined to make David very beloved by the Plishtim. I mean, it's one thing to have to kill Plishtim when you're in a war. It's another thing to chop him up in this very demeaning fashion. And so because of that, he figured the Plishtim are really going to, they're really going to go for David. He's not going to live long. So he asked for this. Yeah, that's the pashtus of how we understand the sugya. Obviously, we know the entire concept of Plishtim relates directly to Orla. That's the whole point. And the contrasts of having, you know, a bunch of Plishtim penises hanging off of your belt as opposed to Bnei Yisrael was a very powerful concept of seeing the difference between Yisrael. And for some reason, we spoke about this at Shimshon, the Plishtim were the classic example. HaPlishti HaAreel HaZeh. That was the whole concept of the Plishtim. So in any event, there's all types of deeper elements that are involved over here. But in any event, he actually did that. So he went ahead and he gave Me'ah Orlot Plishtin to Shaul. And now he wants to have Michal, this is how he was Mekadisha. And how do we see from that? I don't understand. You're saying that because it says, Tantishtiat Michal Asher Rastli, so therefore it must have been Kiddushei To'uz in Merav. I don't understand how you see from that it was Kiddushei To'uz in Merav. My Talmud. No. The thing over here is, Amrav Papa, why does he stress, give me Michal Ishti? Why is he Michal Ishti? So what he's saying is, give me Michal Ishti, and Merav is not Ishti. And that's why I'm able to take Michal Ishti. So David HaMelech was Bedavka making it clear to Ishbosheth why he would be allowed to marry Michal. It was not because, the Merav had died. All right. And what's the Kiddushei To'uz exactly? Well, because remember, before he killed Goliath, so Shaul had given out this proclamation, V'ahaya ish asher yakenu, yashenu amelech osher gadol, and bito, and this was the promise. So when David HaMelech went and actually killed him, so Shaul said to David, okay, you still need to give Kiddushin to my wife, to my daughter, in order for her to be your wife, right? So you never did. Because all that you did was you said that the millions of dollars that I promised you for killing Goliath, that I don't have to pay you. And all I have to do is give you my daughter. So that should be the Kiddushin of my daughter. But the thing is that that is a loan. That's money that I owe you. So when you say, I don't have to pay you what I owe you, that's being Mekadesh B'milva. And the halacha is that Mekadesh B'milva and a Mekadeshes. It has to be an actual Nesina of something that is new and not a forgiving a debt that exists. So therefore, she's not really married to you, and I refuse to accept any kind of condition. Fine. So what happened? So it says at that point, Azo Yavala Adriel. So Shaul wanted to make sure that Merav would never be married to David. So he gives Merav to another guy in exchange for real Kiddushin, and he gives her to Adriel. So instead, at the moment that it was supposed to be given to David for the wedding, he goes ahead, he gives his daughter to Adriel, started making it clear she's never going to go to David. Okay, so then what happened with Michal? So Omar Leh, so Shaul then says to David, okay, if you want to marry my daughter, you know, you can always have my younger daughter, Michal, but you need to be Mekadisher. I'll tell you what, I will accept this Kedushin. Bring me Zil Aitili Mea Arlot Plishtim, and then I'll give her to you. Well, sure enough, David actually does that. Ozal Aitili. Omar Leh, so Shaul said to him, it's still not a good Kedushin. Because what you're actually doing is you're being meichel the millions that I owe you, and you figure that's like the real chashivas of the Kiddushin, and then, okay, you're just going to teach me that you can give me anything, even mea arlos plishtim. But I mean, obviously, it's not the mea arlos plishtim that are valuable in the context of millions of dollars. I mean, to give me a Tesla with mea arlos plishtim flying off of what used to be little antennas on them, on automobiles, remember, once upon a time, flying off the antenna of the Tesla, that's not going to be very choshev. It's the Tesla that's choshev. And therefore, since it's a milveh upruta, and my shita is, said Shaul, that when you're mekadesh with a milveh and a pruta, even if the milveh is millions and you have this pruta, I say that, of course, your das is on the milveh. And therefore, it's not a kosher condition, because the whole thing that you were giving was something that was more choshev, was the Tesla. So, memela, you're not married to Michal, whereas David's shita was, that milveh v'pruta daite apruta. But that's not true. And that if you have also the Tesla with the Mea Arlos Plishtim, that the Mea Arlos Plishtim is a good actual Kiddushin. So because of this, David held, and that's why he writes Ish Boshet, listen, I have a real Kiddushin over here in Michal, and cut out the shtick over here. So what happened was that then, as we're going to see, then Shaul gave Michal to Palti ben Laish to try to do the same shtick that he had done with Adriel. But Palti ben Laish realized that she really was not allowed to be his wife and that she was really married to David. So, but I mean, he didn't dare stand up to Shaul, so he pretended to take her as a wife. We'll see the whole story. Anyway, so that's one way of understanding. Or some say that there was another machlokas over here, not milva upruta, but rather the question of whether there was a pruta. So it could be, the kuli alma milva pruta daita pruta, maybe everybody's made it to David's approach over here, and that the mea arlos plishtim, if they would be worth a pruta, actually would have been able to be used for the kiddushin. But Shaul figures, get out of here, mea arlot plishtim. Who's going to pay a half a cent for mea arlot plishtim? It ain't worth a penny. And therefore, it was just symbolic, and this symbolic doesn't... How you can make a kedushin with symbolic value? That was the question. So Shaul said, v'lo chazi v'lo mineh. What the heck is anybody going to do with 100 arlot plishtim? Good Lord. Whereas David says, what do you mean? It's perfect cat food. I mean, we can even ask Dr. Barry, except that he already left us. It's too late. But what else do you feed your cat besides Arlos Plishtim? As a matter of fact, Richie will recall that when we were in Finland, they had to have as part of the heksher on the grape juice, remember? That does not contain any foreskins. That's what it said right there on the level, on the label. After all, it says... No, the lokashash orla, which they translate, does not contain any foreskins. We never got over that one. So these Christians were very much into their Bible, you know. No orla is pushed in inside your grape juice. That's reassuring. Anyway, so David figured this is great dog food or cat food, and because of that, it was worth a pruta. Anyway, so we have these two approaches, right? So
interesting that Goliath says a kelev anochi. It's another plishti kelev relationship.
Oh, interesting. That's right. Right. Okay. Anyway. Isn't it pretty clear that Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha was right? Rabbi Yehoshua ben Korcha says David never really married Merav because it was Mekadesh B'milva. But David says that. He said, Tnu et ishti et Michal. So I understand, why does Rabbi Yossi give this other answer, that he really was married to Mirav, but he had waited until she died before he married Michal. So what does Rabbi Yossi do with that pasuk? After all, he did say that he was married specifically to Michal, not Mirav. So Rabbi Yossi, I quote, Tnatish diet Michal, unquote. So what does he do with those words? Rabbi Yossi has no problem with those words, because Rabbi Yossi's shita is a general shita that he says all over. Tanya, Rabbi Yossi haya doresh mikraot mu'uravim. What he would do is he would find in places where the Torah, we're going to give examples of this, places where the Torah would seem to put together different issues and pretend that they were connected in a way that didn't make any sense, he would explain that it means exactly that, and you're supposed to learn something from it. For instance, we find that it says, "Vayikach haMelech et shnei bnei Ritzpa bat Aya, asher yaldah leShaul, et Armoni veet Mephibosheth." So it says over here, David haMelech took those two sons, Armoni and Mephibosheth, veet Chameshet bnei Michal, asher yaldah leAdriel haMecholati. Now this is crazy. The five sons of Michal that she gave birth to with her husband, Adriel. What the heck? Michal was never married to Adriel. It was Meirav that was married to Adriel. We just learned that sugya. Vechila Adriel netana. Shaul never gave Michal to Adriel. Shaul gave Michal to Palti ben Laish. So how is the pasuk mixing up this thing? It says beferish. Shaul natan et Michal bat bitom eshet David lepalti ben Laish. Therefore, says Rabbi Yossi, when we find this type of interreferences, what it really means is to teach us something about the relationship between the two non-equivalent statements. So, Makish Kedushi Mirav Ladriel, the Kedushi Michal Lepalti. It's actually coming to compare the two marriages, and in the same way that the Kedushi Michal Lepalti, that for sure, I say, was Ba'avera, and that he had no right to marry her, Palti ben Laish, and he was forced to take her, and he wasn't allowed to, and it was an Avera, because she was really married to David. So this shows that Mikidushe Meirav to Adriel was actually this exactly the same. And the Torah is trying to point out that Adriel had no right to be married to Meirav either, which is what I'm saying. I'm saying that the actual Erison to Meirav was a kosher erison, not because of the milveh. There wasn't a milveh. He had given kedushin. What the Torah has to tell you all of the details that he sent money for kedushin and he sent a pruta to show. That's we don't need to know how. So according to Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, what does he do with that weird pasuk? Chameshet b'nei Michal bat Shaul yaldala Adriel. How does he understand that? Amar lecha Rabbi Yeshua. You know what that's coming to tell us? Here is the medrash on that pasuk. V'chi Michal yalda, v'alo Meirav yalda. It was Meirav that had those children, but the point is that they were orphaned, as I said, from Meirav, and that's why he married Michal afterwards. And Meirav yalda, Michal gidla. Since Michal took over the responsibility of raising them, lefichach nikru'u al shma, they're considered to be the children of Michal, because she put in the child raising. So anyone who puts in the raising of that yatom is as if he was the actual parent. Rabbi Chanina Omer, we know that that's true from elsewhere. It says, beferish by the story of Ruth and Naomi, it says, Vatikrena lo hashchenot shem lemor yulad bein l'Naomi. So why does it say yulad bein Naomi? Naomi didn't have the child. It was actually Ruth who had this child. Hello, Ruth yalda v'Naomi gidla. As it says that they brought Elveit into the bedroom of Naomi. And Naomi actually was able to nurse him despite her age and so on. And lefichach mikroshma. So we consider it to be that she actually raised him, which means that Apparently, there's two ways of learning this, actually. Remember, there's a medrash that says that Boaz died as soon as he impregnated Ruth. So if you hold that that's what this is based on, so then we see from here that raising a yatom is actually the equivalent of having given birth to the yatom. But if you don't hold of that medrash, so then it means that raising a yatom doesn't necessarily mean a yatom. It would mean raising another child is considered to be the equivalent of giving birth. Because over here, the parents were alive. Rabbi Yochanan says, there's another fascinating pasuk that says this. Incredible. V'ishto ha-Yehudiya. And here we're talking about Kalev. We have this strange pasuk in Divrei HaYomim that says that Kalev's wife, the Yehudiya, Yalda et Yered, Avigdor, it goes over all of the names that Chazal are derish, names of Moshe Rabbeinu. So Yered Avigdor, that Edmon was Yered Bismano, Chever Avisocho, Yekutiel Avizanoach. Gemara darshens all of these names as Moshe Rabbeinu. And it says that his wife, Yehudia, had given birth to all of these boys, and all of them were children of Bitya, the daughter of Paro, Ashelakach Meret. Oh my gosh, I'm so confused. So it says over here that it was Kolev's wife who had become Jewish. So she was a Gioret, and her real name was Bitya, Bat Paro. And Kolev had married Bitya Bat Paro, and she is identified as the woman who gave birth to Moshe, who has all of these names. Whoa, what in the world? Now, Mered, we know is Kalev, because he was called Mered, Lamanik Rishmo Mered, Shemarad Batsata Meraglim. He was the one that he stood up against those Meraglim. So it's saying over here, Bitya gave birth to Moshe, Vichy Bitya Yelda, I don't know, last I heard in my Bible class, it said that Yocheved had given birth to Moshe. Ella, what do we know? That Yocheved gave birth, but we know that Bitya raised Moshe. So you see from here, Vichach Mikra, Shema. So since she raised him, therefore he's called Bityas. Okay, so here too, it's not exactly the Yosem that we need to say. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Miyoch. Another beautiful proof. Ka'alta bizroa amecha b'nei Yaakov Yosef Selah. So you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Regoyal Am Yisrael, who are the children of Yaakov and Yosef. Yosef. Yosef Yalad, Yosef didn't give birth to the Yud Beishvatim. Hello, Yaakov Yalad. Hello, Yaakov Yalad, but Yosef was the one who supported them. Yosef Kilkel, the Fichav Nikra Ashmo. So we call them his children. Bnei Yaakov V'Yosef. Omer Abishmu Bar Nachmeni, Omer Rabbi Yonatan. There's another way in which a person is considered to have fathered other children. And that is kol ha-malamid ben chavero Torah, ma'aleh alav ha-katuv ki'ilu yalado. Shnemar ve'ela toldot Aaron u'Moshe. So it says, these are the toldos of Aaron u'Moshe, b'yom diber Hashem b'Moshe b'har Sinai. And then, the pasuk says, ve'ela shemot b'nei Aaron. So it talks about ha-bukhar and Nadav, ha-bukhar, and then Avihu, Elazar, Itamar, you said these are the sons of Moshe. I don't hear any sons of Moshe. Nadav, Avihu, Elazar, and Itamar, all sons of Aaron. Lomar lecha, yes, it's true, Aaron Yalat. But Moshe taught them. Since Moshe taught them, they're called the children of Moshe. Lefichal mikru, ashmo. We see another thing about the same issue. Achin ko'amar Hashem, el beit Yaakov, asher padat Avraham. What is that supposed to mean? How did Yaakov Avinu, how was he the one who was Poda Avraham Avinu? In what sense? V'chiechem atzino b'Yaakov shepoda ol Avraham. Om Rav Yehuda, because Yaakov Avinu took over the Tsar Gidol Bonim that would have been on Avram's plate. Because essentially, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu that he's going to have all of these children and there's going to be this enormous arm coming from him. But Pashtus, that would mean that he was chayev to raise the Yud Beis Shvatim and to go through, as Tosis points out, to go through the hell of the interrelationships of the Yud Beis Shvatim. That's what it's referring to according to Tosfos. Tosfos Tain is that Rashi's approach, in which it's just that he would have to raise them, that's not called opinion. I mean, isn't raising children a joy? Says Tosfos. This is a very contemporary issue. So actually, it's considered to be a simcha. We see it's considered to be a schus and a simcha to have these children. So why does Rashi say it's hell? It must be referring specifically to these children. That was hell. That was true. So we had all of this story of Yosef Yechav, and Avram Avinu would have had to go through that. And therefore, since Yaakov took over the Tsar Gidol Bonim, that was his pidyon. And Ayin Dektiv Lo Ata Yevosh Yaakov. So what does that mean? Lo ata yevosh Yaakov, lo ata panav yechavoru, is lo ata yevosh Yaakov from the madrega of his own father Yitzchak. And velo ata panav yechavoru, he doesn't have to be pale facing the gedula of his father's father, of Avram Avinu. Normally we would say, you know, you're just a lower madrega av, you know. He didn't do anything compared to what it was that Avram did and Yitzchak did. But here, since he is the one that translated the entire concept of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's promise to Avram and to Yitzchak, he made it real. And therefore, he has nothing to be ashamed of, even as he stands with his father, as Theoden King made very clear. Now I'm on a madriga that I don't have to be ashamed of my forefathers. That's exactly what the pasuk is talking about. Each person has a sense of being less than the Teres HaKadmi. Anyway, I think maybe we should wait until tomorrow to explore the inyanim of Palti Ben Laish, which was a fascinating, beautiful discussion.